Welcome to another episode of Working with Purpose. My name is David Stark, and I'm joined by my co-host, Justin Royer, this morning. And we actually have a very special guest that I want to introduce today. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about our relationship. Her name is Aurora Toth. And Aurora and I have known each other for a long time, right? Way pre-internet, let's put it that way, right?
Oh my gosh, you're making me sound so old.
But anyway, it's been a long time we've known each other. And actually, what's been fun is that I am a complete novice when it comes to marketing and let alone branding. And she's been my source. And she's had to ramp all the way back to this is a football with me, right? But it's been fun. It's been a great relationship over a long time. We've been able to do some stuff. But one of the really great things relative to Justin and I is that when we had the idea of the show, we actually brought together friends that were business folk. And they vetted the idea with us for a long time. We bounced stuff back and forth and talked about it and finally decided to launch the show. So I'm so grateful that you're here today, Aurora, what you've invested already.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave. It's great to be here.
Great. So, but on her professional level, she's been a brand strategist and senior marketing person both for a lot of years. Started way back at Procter & Gamble and then came here, and one of the places was Musicland, and then in the buyout, she went from there to Christopher & Banks, and she also has been at the Carlson Hotels, and she's been at a bunch of places. I'm probably missing three, but anyway, she's been in a lot of places and has had great success in those places. And so whenever I want to think about somebody in the whole branding strategy space, Aurora's the person I think of. So, Aurora, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself if you want to?
Sure, just a little bit. Thanks, Dave. That's a great intro. And I think the way to think about me is the branding piece and figuring out the strategy and what consumers' unmet needs are in the marketplace for that product or service is really what gets me going and gets me out of bed in the morning. But I have been doing that from the time I was right out of college with P&G and working alongside the sales organization in the marketing department and then in branding and really, really getting a good foothold. And then they sent me up here. That's how I ended up in Minneapolis. There was this little company called Target. They only had about 500 stores at the time.
Yeah.
And we hadn't been selling our products through Target. I don't think a lot of people realize that today, that years ago, that was not considered where premium products were sold. So this was a whole new beginning. So I was fortunate enough to get in on the ground floor of that.
Absolutely. Fantastic. So our theme today is we've been looking at interconnectivity, as you know, and our big theme of what's happening in the workplace to that. And as you told us, you know, branding has always been, it's always had kind of a natural fit of making connections, right? So we know that, but why don't you ramp us back to the 80s, Aurora, and talk about what it used to be before there was all this interconnectivity.
Yeah, it seems like it was a little bit more simple back then.
Yeah.
You had a product, you had a service, you had to demonstrate the unmet need that it fulfilled, and then you moved on.
Uh-huh.
But interconnectivity with branding has always been a foundational tenet, I believe, and that you needed to make that connection with people's lives. And we did that back way back in the 80s and then the 90s by connecting the brand to spokespeople. You remember Mr. Whipple.
I do.
You remember Mrs. Olson from Folgers. All of that helped the consumer understand, helped the brand resonate in the consumer's life because it brought it down to, hey, I understand that connection and I understand what it does for me. It made it more real and less plastic. And I think P&G pioneered a lot of that and they were really, really good at that. But then, you know, things changed. Consumers change, their needs change, their wants change, and people got more sophisticated and they didn't want to be told what to buy and from a spokesperson that was probably not a real person. So then you saw the advent of more celebrity endorsement or supermodel endorsement. And I remember when P&G bought CoverGirl, and at the time they had another brand called Clarion. Along with that purchase came a bunch of models. And we were not good at having actual real people who were celebrities as spokespeople because they could fall down in the public eye. But that was an evolution that we got through and saw the benefits of and moved forward with that. And I think we see that with things like NASCAR. Procter with the Tide brand and many other brands endorse that. And obviously brands like STP, which might make a little bit more sense for something like NASCAR, were on board with that. So again, it's all about bringing that mental connection and being there where the consumer is and hooking that brand to that connection. So that's been a pretty basic tenet since the 80s.
I got it. Makes sense. And so I know that... You mentioned a bunch of things you were talking about with the Flu Network with P&G and a little bit about Target also. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so this is an evolution that I'm particularly proud of because it's one that I worked on. The brand at P&G for, I believe it was Vicks, had invested in what was called the Flu Advisory Network. The acronym was FAN. And it was a tool that was sitting out there for us to use. And I was working on the Target business at the time, and it was just kind of sitting there. We were trying to figure out how to do some things differently with Target. And some of the smaller brands, and Vicks at the time was well-known but didn't sell as much volume through Target, was something that we were trying to get on end caps and sell a bit more. So one of the things we figured out was, well, we have this Flu Network. And what it was a predictive model, basically, in today's terms, where it was a consortium of physicians, nurses, and people in the medical community who were able to predict the incidence of flu across cities in the United States in advance so that flu vaccines could be stockpiled, et cetera. We bought it thinking, well, maybe we could take this data and figure out when our products might sell more. And we did that, and we used that data. We also then went ahead and built on pallets, shrink-wrapped end caps with things like Puffs, Vicks VapoRub, Vicks NyQuil, that type of thing, and then threw in a few humidifiers and things like that because that drove the profit margin up a bit for Target. And then the key was we were able to work with distribution and send these things out with one SKU on it, which, again, was a big deal back then because usually every product would have its own
SKU.
So we were able to send that out there, and then as the flu incidence started to rise, it went to the correct stores and the correct markets, was able to be taken out to the floor, dropped right there, and we saw huge sales increases.
Wow.
So that's an example of interconnectivity within a distribution network, a marketing network, and then again to the consumer, it was right where they needed to be.
Right.
That's all of that sounds very like 2018 to me, Aurora.
Well, it was a pretty darn good company that I worked for. So that was one of the benefits of P&G. They had deep pockets. They were able to invest in quite a bit that not every company gets to. And then hats off to Target because it was a new philosophy that they hadn't done before, but they were willing to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were speaking about like the marketing and branding in the 90s versus, you know, the progression and what we've seen today. My greatest memory from the 90s from a branding standpoint was a commercial that the tagline was, "Where's the beef?"
Yeah, I remember.
Do you remember what brand that was?
Yes, it was
Wendy's.
What was the name of the woman who used to say it, though, the older lady?
Well, there are two of them. I remember them being paired up. I don't remember. You're right, one of them was the one that would typically say, "Where's the beef?" And this was formative for me, Aurora, because I was sitting in a cafe with my parents. I grew up in a small town, sitting in a little cafe, and I ordered a hamburger like I was prone to do back in the day. And I don't know how old I was. This is probably like late 80s or whatever, so I was not extremely old. but I ordered a hamburger, throw it down to me, and of course I opened the hamburger and said, "Where's the beef?" And then my parents were super embarrassed, but I knew at that point that I was going to be a brand marketer. I'm like, this is the thing for me.
That was a seminal point for you.
This is the thing for me, a marking moment.
There you go.
So I just wanted to
the Holy Spirit spoke to me right
there. It was moving. It was moving in me.
Gosh.
Via Wendy's. So there you go. The 90s lives on in branding lore.
So let's go beyond the 90s, all right? We're gonna dive into now. Because all of a sudden there's this explosion of interconnectivity, right? So we see it being built, and all of a sudden it's everywhere. And what happened to branding, et cetera, in the wake of that?
Well, I think what you have to think about is what happened to the consumer. You know, they're being bombarded by messages everywhere they go. With all the technology comes the opportunity to basically get more and more messaging in front of consumers. And consumers basically said, okay, I've got to tune this out. The human brain can only take so much in them. It's a pretty efficient tool in that it learns what to filter and what's important, what you want to listen to and what you don't. So that makes the marketer's job a bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. And Justin, you know this mm-hmm. firsthand. So I think that's where interconnectivity has truly started to evolve into what's going to be much more robust marketing. And we've seen great examples of that because it's forced us as marketers to just get more strategic and a lot more creative.
Yes.
So example, you talked about my time with Carlson Hotels, and I had the honor of running the Country Inns and Suites by Carlson brand, which here in the upper Midwest, people know. Mm-hmm. But outside of maybe the 6-7 state area, we start to get a little sparse in our footprint, especially compared with our competition, which at the time was Holiday Inn Express, mm-hmm. Hampton, et cetera. So my job as the leader of the brand strategy was, how do we get greater awareness with our customer base and potential customers? People who knew us loved us, and they would go out of their way to stay with us. Once we got them in the door, our wonderful operators would take over, and they'd make the experience so positive that people would come back. Mm-hmm. So how do I get people through the door? How do I get people to try it? So obviously, we did traditional advertising. At the time, we didn't have much for a television budget, so there was a lot of digital advertising. I really cut my teeth on that evolution at Carlson. But we had to get clever about events mm-hmm. and that type of thing. And so being avid golfer and having been raised in a golfing family, I've always had my ear to the ground with that. And I wasn't really looking for any type of event or partnership. They found us. And Zach Johnson's people reached out to me one day, and I was kind of incredulous. I said, is this the real Zach Johnson? Because it is kind of a common name.
Absolutely.
And they're like, no, we promise. It's the, you know, two-time major champion and that type of thing. So we started talking, and in the short term, we decided, okay, it took a lot of convincing internally. Carlson had never done any kind of endorsement, sponsorship, et cetera. But the reason I felt so strongly about this was the interconnectivity between mm-hmm. the Zach Johnson brand and the Country Inns and Suites brand. Mm. And that interconnectivity was simple as both were Midwestern born and raised. So Country was started here mm-hmm. In Burnsville, Minnesota. I don't know if a lot of people know that. The first hotel was there. Mm-hmm. Zach Johnson's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Both are very family oriented. So Country is targeted at families, especially younger families. Zach is a family guy. He's known for that. He's known for his Christian values.
Sure.
And he's just kind of one of those people that you want to be associated with.
Yeah.
He's also very consistent in his golf game. He may not win or be in the top five at every golf tournament, but his wedge play is consistent, et cetera. Country was known for a consistent experience no matter where you go. So you can start to see how those things
sure.
loop together.
Overlapped, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have to take a break here for a minute. We'll be right back. We're listening to Aurora Toast today. We'll see you in a few minutes. How do you manage a business in a world of increased connectivity and interdependence? Each week on Working with Purpose, David Stark and Justin Royer address the changing world of work from a fresh perspective, drawing lessons from ecosystems, the human body, and how organizations and organisms work together. And they'd love to have you join the conversation. You can dialogue with David and Justin on these important discussions, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events, and more through their website, DavidStarkCollective.com, or find them on Twitter at Stark Collective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose, and will help you and your business go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. Find out more by going to DavidStarkCollective.com and open either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. And now let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose. Well,
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer and today's guest, Aurora Toth. You can listen to our podcast anytime at davidstarkcollective.com. And just a quick reminder to check us out on iTunes, where you should leave us a 5-star review. Yes. Anything less than that will disappoint us greatly.
Absolutely.
Just keep those to yourselves, people, okay? So, Aurora, before the break, you were talking a little bit about one of my favorite sports, which is golf. And you were talking about Zach Johnson, who I really dig as well, and what you were doing with the relationship of partnership with him when you were at Carlson. Where did that go? You gave us a good cliffhanger. Now we're all hanging on that cliff. Where did you go with that relationship?
Sure. I think one of the things that we did was we could have just left it there and put a logo on his sleeve, which we did, and not do anything else. And a lot of sponsors do that. We didn't have deep pockets, so this was a big investment for us. So there was a lot of interest in return on investment. So one of the things we did was we established what we called the Zach Johnson rate. Now, in hotels, most of your transactions do happen online. There are still some people who call the hotel and book directly, but most of the transactions happen online. So most of our advertising is done online for that reason. We went ahead and established this rate, which was basically the same discount that AAA gets, that AARP gets. It was about a 10% discount. So it was something that was proven, something that we had done, and was never a big portion, by the way, of where our sales came from. We also, the idea behind working with Zach was reaching out to an audience that was similar to the audience that was already staying with Country, but that maybe hadn't heard of Country, and going at it through different channels. So partnering and purchasing through PGAtour.com, some advertising on those channels to reach a completely different customer than who had already been staying with us. We did that, and that rate, which again was a 10% discount, it wasn't anything that huge, just started to zoom and soar. And we had terrific success behind that. And in the first rolling 12 months that we partnered with Zach, we did over $20 million in revenue.
Wow.
And that was incremental revenue. It was, we measured it. We made sure we knew who the customers were, and they had not been staying with us. So that was one of the big, big eye-openers for us on how we could leverage him, his celebrity, and then we also used him from a B2B standpoint. Not only did he shoot a video for us for our annual business conference with our franchisees, but we had events with key franchisees. We had events with our business development team to bring new franchisees into the business. We actually had a golf tournament here locally where he came and played a hole with every single foursome that we had. We had other celebrities there as well. So it was really an interesting way to leverage it, and he continues to work with the Country Inns and Suites brand today.
Fantastic, Aurora. That's a great story. And I know that especially, it's pretty easy to guess which one of us is a scratch golfer in terms of this co-host, right? Right, Justin?
Well, I don't know, Dave. I've never played golf with you.
I'm a scratch golfer on the, a miniature golf course, but yeah, that's about as good as it gets for me.
Well, that's pretty good.
So let's kind of jump into another example. I know you have. It's with the Beekman boys, right?
Yeah, they are two of my favorite people, I think, in the marketing and branding world, and they're such a success story. For those of you who haven't heard of Beekman and Beekman 1802, that brand has kind of got a cult following and continues to grow. These guys were a creative director from New York and the wellness EVP from Martha Stewart Omni Media, and also he was an oncologist as well. So I believe that's correct. So Brent had reached out to us through our operations team. Quite honestly, we had just gone through a whole new prototype design for Country Inns and Suites. We were looking at everything from not just what the tile on the bathroom should look like, but what amenities, bath amenities, should be made available to our customers. And it was important to us to have something that really felt like the brand, felt curated, a little boutique-y, but wasn't so over the top that it felt unreachable because our customers would have rejected that. And so we had found this Beekman 1802 brand, and they said, hey, we'll create a unique scent and formulation for soaps and shampoos, et cetera, for your hotels. And we said, that's great. Well, we took it one step further with them because what I realized very quickly was they had a cult following of loyal customers who would shop their products no matter where they were. They, by the way, had just done an end cap test with Target on some of their food products. And they had tweeted out to their fan base that, you know, hey, this was in test. Please go buy it at Target. And Target sold out over the weekend, so then they got permanent placement inside Target.
Nice.
So that was a good – that convinced me that they were a good brand to partner with. They are based up in Sharon Springs, New York, so I think 40 minutes outside of Albany. So they're kind of in the middle of New York, and there's not much around there. Every year, and they just had it this past Memorial Day weekend, Sharon Springs has a garden party. It's basically a festival. And the Beekman Boys have really resurrected that and brought that back to life. And so I was thinking about what could we do to engage their fan base with our brand. And I thought, well, maybe what we do is we sponsor a sweepstakes via Country Inns and Suites. They can enter online through a website that we created. And we find four winners. We draw four winners, and we'd send them out to Sharon Springs for that weekend. But then I thought about it. I'm like, where am I going to put these people up? There wasn't even a competitive hotel within, you know, 20 miles of their Beekman farm. And so thought about it, and decided to do a glamping event where I actually built out two Country Inns and Suites, brand new rooms in glamping tents right on the Beekman farm. And so think about just the opportunity to even stay near the Beekman farm, let alone on the Beekman farm, was a big deal to their fans. It was a big deal for us.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun doing it. They were exact replicas down to the air conditioning, the mini fridges, coffee makers in the room. We had the bedding package, the whole nine yards, and it was pretty fantastic. So we did two, it turned out to be a family who won. So they took each of the rooms, and then we had a series of events planned for them for the whole weekend, and obviously one-on-ones with the Beekman Boys. And then when the family left that Sunday night, Brett and Josh decided they'd stay out there. And I think they did a podcast from the rooms themselves, so they were out there as well. So it was great value for us from a public relations standpoint. Yeah. But also, again, engaging with that customer base. Mm-hmm. We were there at the festival, did some sampling, et cetera. So. Mm.
Yeah, it's amazing to both those examples to think about the interconnectivity of those audiences. I mean, you got big audiences on both sides, right? That are basically intersecting with each other around these events or around these the marketing that's happening.
I think the thing to remember too is it's not as easy as it used to be. Both examples that I just gave you, the Zach example and then the Beekman example, they took so many man hours of planning, execution, timing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, it's almost a lot easier to shoot a television commercial and throw it on air, right? Yeah. There's a lot of prep that goes into that, but once you're done, you're done. This was something that you roll the dice a bit because you're putting all this effort and energy in, and you're not really sure if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely the way branding has moved. Not everybody can do these types of events. You can scale back and do some different things, but I think you're seeing more and more of this.
Mm-hmm. Which means there's less testing?
Definitely. Or the testing is quick and you go straight to market.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The testing's in market these days.
Very much
so.
Yeah.
Got it. So you just don't have time don't have that time.
No.
Here we go.
You got to yell, where's the beef? And you just get right at it.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, let's kind of close this program, Aurora. How has your Christianity impacted business for you?
You know, every time I embark on a new adventure in the business world, I like to think that my values and my foundation come from trying to do the right thing for the consumer, and I think that's the tenet of do unto others. I do approach all of my business with a, you know, how is this impacting other people? I try and do that at work every day with employees. But I think it's just really, when you're a marketer, you're constantly looking outward anyway. So I think that helps.
That's great. So one more thing. Can you tell us, if people wanted to talk brand strategy with you or just more with you, how would they get in touch with you, Aurora?
I think you can send me an email, and my email address is tothas@comcast.net.
Got it. So tothas.
A-S.
A-S. tothas@comcast.net.
That's correct.
Thanks, Aurora. You know, her last statement there kind of reminded me of your sense of service, Justin, about same deal, the idea that all of business really, right business is service to others. Is this what she was talking about?
Agreed. Yeah, and I think it's extremely important now to have that perspective on it, too. Like she's like Aurora just mentioned, you know, things are complex and the world's more interconnected. And if you think about it as service, that seems to be pretty helpful.
That's great. Well, listen, you've been listening to Working with Purpose today with David Stark and Justin Royer and special guest Aurora Toth. I just want to remind you that you can listen to all of our podcasts at the davidstarkcollective.com. You can find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. Or once again, go to iTunes under Working with Purpose. I'm so glad you're listening today. We're going to continue actually looking at this interconnectivity part with a series of leaders who are actually having to do this even up against 3M, for example. That's going to come up in a few weeks here. So thank you for tuning in. Enjoy your week.